All right, I think I'm back. It's been a minute since I've done any kind of podcast. In fact, I think it was last August. If I go back to my podcast feed, lots has happened since then. And I've just decided, you know what? There was an event that transpired this week, and I feel like I've seen it before. I've been there. I've done that. It's the collapse of the Silicon Valley Bank. And even if you don't live in Silicon Valley and you don't think it has any effect on you, I thought it was a good place to sort of get back involved in sharing some thoughts every week about what's going on in the marketplace. I really enjoy the podcast. I've gotten a chance to meet lots of cool entrepreneurs. I've had lots of folks that I've been able to help, as it turns out. And they've been super grateful for that. And so I thought, you know what, with the event of Silicon Valley Bank, because it mirrors a couple of other things I've seen, I thought, you know what, this is a great time to jump back into the podcast game. And lots of things have changed in my life since August. And so I'm excited to start posting these again and to see where they go. And so just as a real quick recap, because many of the folks that have subscribed to the podcast and have listened to it in the past are not from Silicon Valley. So you might be thinking, what's the big deal? So I'll just do a quick recap for you. So Silicon Valley Bank, I think one of the top 20 banks in the U.S., but primarily geared and totally focused on helping entrepreneurs. And so the idea would be that as an entrepreneur, you'd go and raise a big round of capital, you'd put your money in with this bank, Silicon Valley Bank, and then as you know, most banks make money by lending it out. So they pay you and I nothing, and they end up lending it out and making some money on it. But when the cash is just sitting there, what they do is they invest it in low, supposedly low risk investments like government treasuries and bonds and mortgage-backed securities. And so what happened with Silicon Valley Bank is it looked like, because of what's going on with interest rates, that they needed to raise some capital. And they made an announcement a couple days ago that they were going to look to shore up their balance sheet. And what that resulted in was the market going, uh-oh, something's wrong with this bank. And they've been around for 40 years, so it's not like they were a brand new, super sketchy bank or anything like that. And all of a sudden, they didn't have enough cash on hand to meet the demands of people that started pulling cash out of the bank. And then effective yesterday afternoon, the regulators stepped in and just have shut the bank down. And the bank is now in effect. This is late Saturday morning on March the 11th. And the FDIC, which is the insurance company that insures deposits, they've stepped in and just completely frozen the bank. And so that now has caused a ton of chaos. There are people, there are companies, thousands of companies that had payroll scheduled to go and payroll didn't make it through. There are people that aren't getting their money today. And anyway, there's just a whole bunch of things that come off of this. Now, bank failures are not, they're not unique. They happen all of the time. This one, as I get through the rest of the episode, I think is a little bit unique because it did cater specifically to entrepreneurs. It did cater to venture capitalists. And so someone like me would say, you know, if there was an event that you could have never anticipated happening, it would be a top bank that is funded by venture capitalists and is fueling the economy of small business owners and entrepreneurs, that they would in fact fail. I don't think anyone could have possibly had that on their radar. And so I just thought, again, just it was a good point for me to jump back in. At my stage and age of life, I have seen these things before, and I know that there are lots of entrepreneurs that are younger than me that haven't been through something like this before. So I thought this was a good point to jump off and bring to the attention of business owners that there are things called black swan events. In fact, there is a book I've read several times. I know lots of entrepreneurs have read it as well, and it's the called Black Swan by Nassim Nicholas Taleb. He's a prolific dude. You know, he's got an interesting theory. The book is a little bit nerdy, but the basic premise is that the things that cause the biggest shifts in, well, I guess in our lives, but he was a trader and a business guy, so he was looking at it from the perspective of the economy. But if you extrapolate it a little bit, these black swan events are typically events that shift our lives or make a major set us down a different course that we couldn't have possibly anticipated. And kind of The easiest thing to illustrate that would be, I think he made the comment that in the United States, this was before 9/11 when those planes flew into the building, that no one in government, no one in the marketplace was considering that an airplane could be used as a weapon. Sure enough, it happened. And now, thanks to that event, there are new policies, there are new laws that were written, there are new things that have happened now at airports. And so these are black swan events. The Silicon Valley Bank collapse, some people are saying it's not a black swan event, although I would make the case that for younger entrepreneurs that have never been through any kind of a difficult moment in the marketplace, this for sure is a black swan event for them. The last black swan event I was a part of was the financial crisis. That was back in 2008, 2009. I was just over 30 years old when that happened. And I had never seen a market collapse ever. And I happened to be running one of the largest independent mortgage brokerages in our country. Dozens of agents doing deals. And literally overnight, we couldn't get mortgages funded anymore. And the entire credit market froze up. And there's nothing anyone could have done to prepare me for it. And so my hopes today on today's podcast is not necessarily to prepare you for a black swan event, but rather just provide what I have taken away from some of the events that I've been a part of that help that have helped me continue to move forward every single day. And so what does the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank mean for business owners? It means, first of all, that I think first, black swan events are real. And if you're an entrepreneur that, as I've said on numerous podcasts before, if you've never been punched in the face, if you don't know what it feels like to have a very difficult moment in your business, part of these black swan events are just, they're normal. That doesn't mean that they're easy. That doesn't mean that they're simple, but they are in fact to be expected. When you run a business, when you take on the risk of starting a business, and as an entrepreneur, you take people and resources and you put them together and you hope to solve a problem in the marketplace. And if that problem is sharp enough, people will pay money to have that problem solved and off we go. So it's normal that things are not always going to work out as planned. There's an interesting element to what's happened with Silicon Valley Bank that I didn't really think about until I started considering the impact to entrepreneurs. And so for context, this is how I'm thinking about it now. I'm 45 years old, and it wasn't until about a decade ago that entrepreneurs could go out and raise money in massive amounts in advance of them having any kind of results. And so to provide kind of a crass example, I would say, you know, when Henry Ford created the Model T, he didn't have $20 million sitting in the bank as cash waiting to be deployed into his business to give him runway to make sure he could pay his bills. That was something new that I have witnessed with what happened from the birth of sort of the social media technology space. When you look at the arc of what happened after the internet, when there was the dot-com crash, which I very, very clearly remember, there was this new thing that happened, new to me anyway. I don't know if it can be substantiated or not, but all of a sudden, all of these companies, and we're talking tens of thousands of companies, just have all this cash, and they're just sitting on cash. And so then you look at something like the Silicon Valley Bank failure, and you go, man, all these businesses now don't have access to their cash. They're going to be lucky next week if they can access, you know, $250,000 over the coming weeks or months or even years. They might get access to the rest of it, but many businesses simply won't make it that long because they won't be able to pay their bills. But it got me thinking, you know, there's a shift that has happened with entrepreneurs that and businesses that I think had to be corrected anyway. And I'm not hearing anyone talk about it yet. They might talk about it in the weeks to come. But this idea that you could go out, have an idea, raise a bunch of money, and then bring it to the marketplace is something very, very new. It used to be that entrepreneurs were like this little obscure subculture group of people that would work in their garage. They would produce a product, or they would solve a problem, and then they would go to the marketplace, and just one customer at a time, they would build up their business, they would build up their resources, they would build up their people, and they would dominate and they would change the marketplace. Well, we haven't really seen that happen. I haven't seen, there's a few stories that come out of, you know, where an entrepreneur is like, look, I took something from nothing and I really made it into something. But there's an entire generation for sure in the millennial space and for sure in the Gen Z space where entrepreneurs haven't had to grind it out or really hustle. Like we've taken the words of, you know, grind and hustle and we've changed them to mean something else. It used to be when you were starting a business, like you honestly didn't know what tomorrow was going to hold for you. And you didn't have the privilege of sitting on a big bag of cash to say, hey, I'm like really, I don't have to be as focused on being profitable as I need to be because I have all this money. And so all of this money means that I can take longer to develop my product. Maybe it also means I don't have to develop a product that is truly, truly valuable. And so it's not the fault of those generations, it's what the market has enabled. And so with the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank, I'm predicting that there's going to be some very fundamental shifts in a whole bunch of things. And I think the first thing that's going to shift is I think that business owners, certainly business owners like myself, now that you've seen a bank fail when there really is no reason for it to have failed, there was a whole bunch of things that got missed by regulators. There were a whole bunch of things that got missed by venture capitalists. But ultimately, I think we're going to see, first of all, that a new kind of bank is probably going to emerge somewhere. And this bank is going to say, look, we will just hold your cash. We're not going to do anything with it. We're not going to leverage it 10 times. We're not going to invest it even in safe securities, quote unquote. We're just going to hold it. And instead of charging you nothing per month, instead of charging you $5 in service fees every month, we're going to start charging you $50 a month because we have to pay to take care of your cash. But the difference will be is we're not just going to make arbitrary decisions to do it. Again, as context, a bank takes your money, they pay you, say, a little bit of interest, they turn around and they do deals and try to make a lot of interest. And so their profitability is based on the difference between what they pay you, which is, or me, which is close to nothing, and then what they're able to go out into the marketplace and invest it and get a return on. So I think there's going to be a change there where people will look for banks that will only hold their money. And in fact, when we say hold their money, it doesn't mean like they're holding it in a bank vault like you'd see in a cartoon. I think what it means is that you will always have access to your liquidity, that there isn't going to be a need for a bank to say, look, we only keep 25% of cash on hand. I think there's going to be a whole change to banking. I mean, we saw it with airports after 9/11. We saw it with mortgage approvals after the financial crisis. Like these things, these black swan events make very big fundamental shifts to the marketplace. And I think one of them is going to be that banking is going to change big time. And I think it'll actually be just common people, business owners like you and I, that say, look, we don't want to have to worry that we cannot access our cash. So you're kind of left with one of two options. Either you're going to go and get massive lines of credit and only run your business on credit, or you're going to be a better steward of your cash and you're going to say, we're only going to have small amounts of cash. If we're sitting on piles and piles and piles of cash, then that means we're not doing a good job investing it. So we either need to buy assets, we need to buy real estate, we need to hire more people, we need to grow, but we're not going to just keep these big piles of cash sitting around. And I think banks, a new model of bank is going to step forward where if over the last couple of years people haven't really understood smart contracts using blockchains and using cryptocurrency, I think what's going to happen is you're going to see banks emerge that take smart contracts, crypto, blockchain, and they're going to form a new type of bank that is not completely decentralized like the crypto guys would want us to have, but also not completely centralized and maintained by gatekeepers, which is what the banks are right now. So what does this mean for you as a business owner? I think as business owners, we have a huge responsibility to manage risk. And there's, you know, two generations of business owners now that have never had to concern themselves with interest rates. And I think that's probably a content for another podcast episode, which is this rise in interest rates we've witnessed over the last year. So two generations of business owner have never had to come to terms with the fact that money isn't free. And their businesses really were only profitable because money was free. In a normal, I'll say normal, historical operating environment, money isn't free. And as a business owner, when you make the decision to borrow money, there's a cost to that capital. And then as a business owner, you have to decide, can we get the cost of that capital covered? And can we leverage it into something that provides us with a greater return? So business owners have to manage risk really, really well. And that means anticipating what could go wrong in your business and then having a plan for it. Many just run-of-the-mill business owners like me, we don't do any kind of forward-looking in our business. We run our business day-to-day. Most of us have lines of credit where we know if anything significant were to happen, we can just dip into our line of credit and everything's going to be okay. But these black swan events, if that's how you run your business, these black swan events can have a detrimental effect to your business. And the reason why that's important is because as business owners, we are charged with building healthy, stable businesses that provide an opportunity for people to use their skills and their talents to earn an income. And that's philosophical. That's what I believe at my core. I don't believe everyone's meant to be a business owner, just like I don't believe everyone's meant to be an employee or on someone else's team. But being a steward and being a leader means that you've got to be able to manage the risk in your business. And if you're not managing your cash flow on a week-to-week basis, if you're not considering the top three things that could negatively affect your business and then have a 1-2-3 plan for them, then it just means when these black swan events come along, you're not going to be able to deal with it. And human nature will dictate that we only deal with the problems that are staring us in the face, and we don't look to try and worry about the things that happen in the future. And I think there's maybe, you know, a little bit of credit to that, but I don't think that, you know, I don't think that ignorance is necessarily the best thing. I think that if you're running a business and you have a team of people that are relying on you to provide an opportunity for them, then that comes with the responsibility of saying, what could affect us negatively? What could affect all of our team negatively? What could affect our business? And just a simple way to think through that is maybe just on a pyramid basis, you say, what things in the market could affect our business? What things in our business could affect our people? And what things in the lives of our people could affect ultimately the overall health of our organization? And then as a business owner, your job is to fill in those gaps. And if you don't want to do that, you don't have to, but it just means when these black swan events come along, or not even black swan, any negative event comes along that you weren't planning for. It doesn't even have to be an unknown one. It just has to be one that you didn't think was going to happen, but did. Then you get wiped out. And then that's hugely tragic, because the only thing that we have as business owners to create value from is time. And we use our time to do that. We collectively take the time of the people on our teams that we lead, and we try to create value off of that. And so if all of a sudden you've run a business for a bunch of years and you decided not to manage it very well, and then that business doesn't survive, well, you just blew up all that time and most likely don't have anything to show for it. And I think that's really tragic. So I think business owners have to manage risk. I think there's two generations of business owner right now, Gen Z and millennials, that don't have any context for what it means to be borrowing money, much less have an event that really kind of knocked them back. There's an expectation that money is free. And then because of the last decade of what's happened in Silicon Valley en masse with technology companies, there's this idea that you can just go out and raise money. You don't actually need to create value. You can just go out, sell an idea, give up some of your company, and get a bunch of dough. What I find really interesting about the collapse of Silicon Valley is it's not going to just, in my opinion, I don't think it's just going to affect business owners, and there's going to be just a ton of business bankruptcies because of this. I think it's actually going to affect venture capital. I think venture capital, like these venture capitalists had money in this bank as well that they can no longer access. And I think this idea that venture capitalists have been able just to invest money, park it with businesses and get a great return, maybe we see the end of that. You know, maybe we go back to this idea that if you want an investor in your business, that investor is going to ask some very basic things like, are you profitable? Have you created value? Do you have customers that are paying you? Do you have control over your burn rate? And I think that's a positive thing. It sucks right now, because if you happen to be one of the businesses that now is coming face to face with interest rates, is coming face to face with the fact that cash can disappear. This is not good news for you. You'll get to the end of this moment for sure. A year from now, you're not going to feel the way you do today. And there's certainly some carnage ahead of us. And I guess we just pray to God that this doesn't create a bank run for other small banks that are around the country. In the U.S., I'm in Canada, but in the U.S., this might create a bit of a bank run because now it's going to negatively impact people's psychology. So they're just out of pure fear. Even if you're, you know, in the middle of the U.S., you might be now reconsidering, hey, is my cash actually safe at the bank? So this could create a run on the banks, but I do think it shifts and changes fundamentally entrepreneurs creating businesses. But interestingly enough, I also think it's going to affect how venture capitalists decide to fund businesses. And businesses is like almost like a purging, if you will. We've seen the stock market get decimated in the last couple of years because all of these companies weren't able to survive, given you know what happened with COVID and inflation. And there's just a lot of factors at play there. But the Silicon Valley Bank in particular, if there was a bank that everyone thought wouldn't fail, I'm pretty sure this was going to be the one that everyone would have pointed to. Sure enough, it's failed. It's going to have collateral damage everywhere. So for business owners, this means that for those of you that really care, that you think you take pride in your business, you do believe that you have a purpose, that your business has a purpose, that you have a mission, then this is an event that should cause you to stiffen your spine a little bit, sit back and say, hang on a second, I don't want to see my business get destroyed because of something I can't control. So maybe if those things I can't control are going to happen anyway, there's nothing I can do about that. But this should cause you to say, how well do I really run my business right now? Like, do I know what the top three risks are in my business? Aside from me not getting sick or getting ill as the owner, what are the other risks that our business is exposed to? But more importantly, what are we doing to create a buffer between us and those risks? And so I think there's a huge, 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 huge opportunity right now for a new type of entrepreneur to emerge that will be more of a leader. I haven't seen, and I think that there's probably statistics somewhere to back this up, but I haven't seen that leadership has been like a really, really big deal for entrepreneurs. It's been a big deal in terms of like, quote unquote, the right thing to do. But when you get into these really difficult moments in the marketplace, there's a new mentality that develops. You know, when you've been borrowing money as a business owner for the last decade and it hasn't cost you anything and you've been running your business and it's been going really well and you think you're awesome and all of a sudden something happens and you realize it had nothing to do with you. You just happen to be riding the crest of a wave. And if you've listened to my podcast, you know that that's exactly my story. I thought I was super awesome and it turned out I wasn't. I just happened to be riding the wave of a very strong market that was inside of a bubble. You then develop a thicker skin and you have now a different way to look at the marketplace. And I know that the financial crisis in particular, while it took me quite a while, almost a decade to get my feet beneath me again, it did instill, and maybe maturity is part of that as well, but it did instill in me this idea of having to be resilient, of truly having to understand how do you really lead people, because people are what make your business work. You can have lots of resources, you can have lots of assets, but at the end of the day, if there aren't people to use them, then those things mean nothing. And so becoming a leader is a really big deal. And I think we're going to see out of this particular moment and in the years to come that this would have been a pivotal moment where a new type of entrepreneur emerges that is way more gritty, that is a return probably to the things of old, because I don't believe anything's new under the sun. I think we've all seen things happen in history, and we just need to kind of wait to see how it happens again. Usually happens in a different way, but conceptually the same thing's happening. And I think we go back to the days of entrepreneurs saying, you know what, I don't want to raise $5 million or $10 million because it's nothing anyway. It's just money sitting in a bank. It's not doing anything. I'm more interested in building some real value. I'm more interested in grinding it out in my garage, grinding it out at my computer screen, and I'm going to create something that I'll just bootstrap. I will find a way to make work until such time as I've got customers, and as I've got customers, I will grow my business the way every business in the world has been grown since the beginning of time. And that's one customer at a time, making wise decisions, using the people and the resources that you have to continue to just do a little bit better. And again, I think with this bank failure, it just highlighted to me that is my opportunity as well, which is to continue to share my stories, my thoughts, the examples in my life of what I've seen with running a business. I don't run, you know, a huge popular software company or an app or anything like that. You know, I'm running businesses that employ real people that do real work, and we have real challenges and we have real opportunities. And so I think there's an opportunity to have more entrepreneurs come forward, share their stories that people can benefit from, and ultimately build really stable businesses that not only provide for the lives of the people employed by them, but also make a real impact to the community around them. And I think that's, as a business leader, that is our biggest opportunity, is how much impact can we make out there. And so when I kind of, the last little trailing thought I had with what the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank means for entrepreneurs is, you know, what do we do with our wealth? You know, there's this idea that, you know, I'm racing to build cash, and I'm a huge proponent of creating businesses that generate free cash flow. What I'm not a big proponent of is that cash doesn't get used. You know, it's always struck me that if you go back and take a corporate finance course, or you just look at even, you know, the idea of what it means to be inside of a capitalistic society or business model, you know, companies like Google and Apple, they sit on these piles and piles and piles of cash, which to me, if, you know, as a business owner, the pile of cash is two things. I think the pile of cash tells me, hey, we did a good job. We were able to raise, you know, create enough value that created all of this cash. But the thing that created that cash often isn't the same thing that cash gets reinvested back into. And these companies that have a lot of cash oftentimes aren't doing anything innovative anymore. They're not really solving any huge problems. If I look at to contrast it against something else, if I look at a guy like maybe Elon Musk, you go, you know, he seems to be the epitome of taking a win in one idea and then placing it into another idea, and then another idea, and then another idea. And he just keeps stacking his opportunities, and cash is really just the means by which he capitalizes on them. For millennials and Gen Z, I think the example is as simple as Mr. Beast. You know, the guy's not sitting on piles of cash. He keeps taking all the money that he makes from the last video to make a new one, and that's how he grows, and that's how he's making an impact. And we can see the impact that he's having on the community and the space in which he moves. And so what do we do with our wealth? Again, I'm a huge proponent of building a business that has free cash flow, but I'm not a huge proponent of storing cash, because what's the point? What's the point of having all of that cash? I think there are obviously fringe cases and unique cases like, say, you know, Buffett and Warren Buffett and Berkshire Hathaway that have all this cash. The reason they have all that cash is because they're also in the insurance business. So if there was a world event that created a lot of damage in a certain part of the world, they would have to have access to real cash to make up. But for all of us that run businesses, there really is no value to just sitting on piles and piles of cash, because cash isn't a useful resource when it's sitting idle. It has to be deployed. It has to be used. For those of you that know me, I follow as a Christian, I'm a huge believer in the parable of the talents or the bags of gold. That's Matthew 25:14-30, and it talks about how you've got five, you know, one fella gets, you know, five bags of gold, turns it into five more, another guy gets two, turns it into two more, and another guy buries it in the ground. And to me, building up cash for the sake of building up cash is useless. And then that ties back to my earlier comment, where if you're a young business owner that was just given a $10 million check to go and explore your idea, you're not going to use that $10 million in short order. You're probably going to take a few years to use it, but it also doesn't, it means you're not being as innovative as you need to be. You're not trying as hard as you could to actually create something real. So, you know, this collapse just makes me think and be reminded of what do we do with our wealth, and storing it as numbers in a bank account seems to be a complete waste. And what should we be doing with it instead? I actually think we should be using it to start businesses, to buy assets, to invest in people, and ultimately to give it away. I mean, you can't take it with you anyway, right? And I know there's something to be said about creating generational wealth, but I'm not sure generational wealth happens because someone has a big bank account with a bunch of cash in it. That's not creating generational wealth. That's just creating generational entitlement. I think we have a responsibility to take our cash and to do something with it. And as an entrepreneur, I believe our best investment is to keep reinvesting it back into ideas that change our world for the better. And it's no mystery. There's lots of people out there that will, you know, give you specific examples, but I would say the world hasn't been an incredibly creative place, certainly in the last couple of decades. You know, we are not solving any big problems. There are a few individuals that have tackled, you know, for example, going to space, but there are very simple things that we still have problems with. We have a labor shortage. We have people that can't get the skills they need to get into the marketplace. We have students going to school to get degrees and coming out with college debt and they can't pay it off. We have healthcare problems. There are a lot of meaningful problems in the world to solve. And I think that by all of us hoarding cash, we are doing a terrible job of taking advantage of those opportunities. Because if you're going to be walking around here on the earth, you're going to be spending some time every day doing whatever it is you're doing. You might as well do something that is meaningful and produces a result. And anything that just allows you to stack cash, I'm not sure. And that's the end goal in and of itself, is just to stack cash. Well, then I feel sad for you. And I feel like the world's missing out on the benefit that you could be providing it by using that cash to go and solve some very meaningful problems. So that's it. There's, you know, lots of little subset things to talk about inside of there. But, you know, in essence, I think this Black Swan event is going to be a wake-up call for two generations of entrepreneur. I also think it's a wake-up call for venture capitalists and how we fund these new companies. I think it's going to be a wake-up call for the banking system, much like the financial crisis was. And I think we're going to see a simplified version of banking come forward. And for us as everyday business owners, this is a great moment to reflect on our businesses and say, what are we doing to manage risk in our own businesses? And as a leader, what am I doing to make sure that we are creating a business that does generate free cash flow? Not cash flow, but free cash flow. And that's, look it up, Google it. Maybe I'll spend an episode talking about it, but what are we doing to generate cash, free cash flow? And then most importantly, what are we doing with our free cash flow to continue to create a stable business and a healthy business that's going to provide meaningful opportunity for people that have skills and talents and simply need a great place to deploy them? And hopefully that those are our businesses. So thanks for tuning in. If you caught the live stream, make sure to subscribe on YouTube. Leave a review on the podcast. In the show notes, I've got all my contact information. And as I've said, I just enjoy doing this because I've gotten to meet so many great entrepreneurs and have been able to make a difference in their lives. And I'm running businesses myself, and so I'm faced with the same challenges that everybody else is. I just maybe enjoy hearing the sound of my own voice and wanting to share it with others. So thank you for tuning in, and hopefully become a subscriber, and hopefully we get a chance to connect.